Good afternoon. We're back with another episode of the Sean Moe Hoops podcast on Tuesday, February 5th. And once again, joined by my good friend, Michael Weisenberg, who's here to chat about college basketball and everything that's going on in the basketball universe. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Sean. Thanks for having me as always. And excited to talk about some college hoops.
Definitely. So we had some good games tonight and definitely a few upsets with Illinois upsetting Michigan State at home and Kansas State pulling an upset over Kansas. But first, I want to flash back to this past weekend. We almost did a podcast on Sunday night where it would have been a little bit more relevant, but I think we have to start out with NC State. I know they're not a team that we probably usually talk about, and this time we're bringing them up for all the wrong reasons, but anytime you score 24 points in a college game, got to bring it up. It wasn't against Virginia, but it was against Virginia Tech at home. I know you didn't watch the game live, but you definitely saw the score. So what were kind of your initial reactions upon seeing that final?
It was a shock and awe, Sean. It was really a shock and awe. They had just like – I know they lost to Virginia by very little, but –
1 point.
I know they, yeah, and they beat Clemson with that last second Braxton Beverly three, and then Braxton proceeds to go 0-for-12 and miss all 9 of his 3-point attempts. So I guess getting that win by the skin of their teeth eventually led to them with the 47-24 loss. And the worst part of that, I think, is the fact that the game was at home. And I know from experience of watching some very bad Oregon basketball games, if my team were to score 24 points at home, I think I would probably be beside myself.
Well, you know, Virginia Tech only scored 47 points. You look at the game and you had NC State go 2 of 28 from 3. They scored 0.45 points per possession. Virginia Tech only scored 0.89 points per possession. But I remember I was watching the UNC Louisville game at that point in time and turned over to the NC State Virginia Tech game. And I think NC State had 10 points at the time. And I remember kind of cracking up. But I also, the one possession, NC State maybe missed 5 shots in a row in the same possession. And I quickly turned it back to that game. But monitor the score, thinking that at some point they've got to actually score points. And lo and behold, they finished with 24. So that leads me into tonight. They're going into Chapel Hill. NC State has been dominated by UNC since Roy Williams took the reins back many, many years ago. So I did have a small feeling of dread that, you know, here they are scoring 24 points on Saturday and maybe they pull a huge upset on Tuesday, but kind of the reverse happened. They scored 96 points, but they got absolutely blown out by UNC, 113-96. UNC pretty much had the game in hand after the first 13 minutes. Luke May had another dominant effort against NC State, going for 31 points and 12 rebounds. So kind of going forward, did you expect that they might be able to bounce back considering that they're a ranked team going into that Virginia Tech game, or did you have any hope for them on Tuesday night?
Oh, man, I really felt like North Carolina would have the upper hand. And I think that NC State, they got that win against Louisville, which is all well and good, but a lot of the conference, you know, people that have like strong starts to conference play, that can many times be because of scheduling. And that's pretty much why most conferences tend to play like 18 or so conference games. And it really separates the men from the boys. So, yeah, I have a feeling that NC State might have a pretty tough rest of conference in the ACC.
Yeah, they, you know, going into ACC play, they had a big upset win against Auburn, lost to Wisconsin. But besides that, they're beating some of the worst teams in the country. you know, you can throw a big Penn State win there, who is currently sitting at 1-10 in the Big Ten. But somehow they're ranked, and, you know, they're not going to be ranked anymore. But that leads me to what you were talking about, unbalanced scheduling. And we'll start with ACC, but right now, you know, a very large conference last year talked about as one of the most, you know, the best conference. And I think they had the most teams, but everybody was pretty much losing in the first weekend. So I know being out on the West Coast, so what are your thoughts on the ACC at this point of the season?
It's very top heavy, but still, I think they're still one of the more solid conferences out there. And teams in the middle of the pack, I think, would certainly compete in some of the other conferences. I know the bottom is not looking great, but yeah, they have a few teams at the top who I think can make very deep runs into March. And I don't know. I particularly think Duke and Virginia stand out. Your North Carolina boys are doing pretty well also. So, you know, they've put up a nice fight against most teams that they played this year and have done quite well.
Yeah, I would probably have Virginia and Duke kind of in the top tier. I think Virginia, I was reading John Gassaway's Tuesday Truce article, and I think Virginia had one of the biggest efficiency margins in conference play out of the Power Five of 0.25 between offense and defense. But once again, you know, Tony Bennett dominates the ACC in the regular season. Then you had Duke with Zion and RJ and that crew that was down 2 points to BC and then blew them out in the second half at home. No surprise they match up again, this time in Virginia. And then kind of just a shade below that, I have North Carolina. I think they could easily beat both of those teams. And they've been playing pretty well. Cam Johnson has been shooting the absolute lights out of the ball. I think we've talked about it before, but every time he takes a shot, it looks like it's going in. Kobe White has been one of the top freshmen. We'll get to him definitely later. And Luke May has been very prone to forcing shots, but today he was knocking him down, and he's been very aggressive on the boards, especially in that Louisville game where they kind of jumped on Louisville at the beginning, and it was kind of a role reversal of the first two games. And then kind of in the, I'd say, tier three, you have Louisville, I'd say, by themselves. And then you can kind of go to the tier four, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Florida State, the teams that'll make the tournament. Virginia Tech's still somehow in the top 10 in KenPom and other rankings. You know, not a huge fan of them. And then you kind of have your tier five, really just, I'd say, bad teams in ACC. And you have NC State, Clemson, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, BC, Pitt, Wake, Miami. And some of these teams are absolutely horrible. So it's kind of disappointing being an ACC fan and seeing all these teams that used to be good. You know, Wake Forest, Georgia Tech back in the day. I mean, Notre Dame and Miami are having down years. But each year the ACC is so terrible at the bottom that such an uneven scheduling, it's so easy to rack up a decent amount of wins. So when you finish 9-9, that looks good, but in the grand scheme of things, probably six of those wins were against garbage teams. So as an ACC fan, it's disappointing to see, you know, what I think is kind of what used to be an amazing conference go down the drain. But there are definitely teams that can win the championship and kind of salvage the season for some.
Now, when you say a conference go down the drain, can we not – like kind of put that into context with some of the other conferences, because I feel like almost every conference is pretty top heavy. Like there aren't a lot that have a great deal of parity at this point.
Yeah, you're right on that. I mean, you can look at the Big Ten and you have Illinois, Rutgers, Nebraska, Northwestern, Penn State all at the bottom. And you can kind of, you know, the Big East, you have Villanova, who is still undefeated. And I think we chatted about them last time, and definitely like Villanova, but at the same time, it's a down year in the Big East. And then obviously there's Pac-12 that has had its fair share of problems. So, yeah, I mean, from top to bottom, it's going to be hard to field a strong conference, but it's just disappointing year in and year out. There's so many kind of bottom feeders at the ACC that used to be good or at least formidable. And now, you know, last year UVA went 17-1 in the conference. And, you know, was that record-wise, that was one of the best ever seasons, but it can't really be compared to years past where there's, you know, maybe nine teams and usually seven or eight of those were decent. But I think that's the state we're in right now. But one team I do want to talk about and going to a conference we usually ignore is Kentucky. And they are 8-1 in the conference, lost that first game to Alabama at Alabama, where they got hit pretty hard early and they had a shot to win it, but really Tevin Mack kind of killed them early on, but they've kind of rattled off 8 in a row. And PJ Washington has been really one of the top players in the country over the past few games. So what are your thoughts on Kentucky at this point? And do you think they could unseat Tennessee at the top of that conference?
I think there's definitely a chance. They were a team that I was relatively down on going into the year. I just wasn't sure that they had a lot of five-star players, and as always, you know, John Calipari is going to have his pick of a few McDonald's All-American level guys. But yeah, they were a team I wasn't high on, and then the Duke game definitely, you know, was like, this was what I was talking about. But they've really come together, and, you know, they have, like, some solid offense at the top. They have Ashton Hagans playing good defense and running the team. They still have a little bit of firepower off the bench as well. So, yeah, they're like, really, they've been playing really well over the last little while. And PJ Washington, I was never a huge fan of his. I didn't like his. Just when I remember seeing him, and you know, he'd have some problems scoring through contact. I didn't really like him that much as a shooter. Well, he's really improved, and yeah, so he's been very big for them. I knew Reed Travis would be a good get, and you know, be a guy that could give them minutes right away. Keldon Johnson was always the guy I liked, and a guy who I felt could score through contact and could kind of score through from all three levels as well. And decent on-ball defender, though. I know people kind of get on him for not really creating events or getting huge percentages as far as steals or blocks. I think he only has like a few blocks this year. But yeah, they're looking like a pretty strong group, and then Tyler Hero provides some shooting for them. So yeah, they certainly from top to bottom, they look like a team that can at least compete with Tennessee, albeit Tennessee has the experience and probably the best player on the floor. And then a really another solid one, Admiral Schofield too.
Yeah. Brett
Williams being the best player on the floor.
Yeah. So PJ Washington for the last five games having 20 points or more. They blew South Carolina out at home. Tyler Hero has definitely been playing well shooting the ball, which is something they haven't really had lately. Even EJ Montgomery got into the action, but still point guard is a question spot. Hagans played 28 minutes, produced a nice offensive rating of 40, six turnovers. did have three steals. He's known for his defense. But then you have Emmanuel Quickly, another highly touted freshman. Didn't really do much. So I think that's still an area of concern. And, you know, I think will definitely be interesting when they do match up with with Tennessee and SEC play, because Tennessee
for sure,
is
moving forward. I'm really interested to see how Higgins like does offensively with that. But yeah, like I know, believe me, offensive rating is definitely something that you look at when you're evaluating these guys, especially for the next level. But I feel like in a game they won by 28 points, you know, like it wasn't the end of the world that he didn't really score or, you know, do very much when everybody else seemed to be getting in on the action. So, yeah, that's something. And, like, the 6 turnovers definitely don't look good. But, yeah, it'll be something to definitely look at going forward. And, I think his offense is an area that, you know, you're really going to have to monitor because he started off conference really well, and then, he's kind of come back down to earth.
Yeah, and they play at Mississippi State, which could be a tough game, and then they have LSU at home and then Tennessee at home as well. So definitely a good stretch for Kentucky coming up. Kind of moving on, one little segment that's always fun to do is to throw out a few teams and see if you're buying or selling. And I feel like we've either gone through a decent amount of these teams or there's just teams that don't really have any interest in talking about. But why don't we stay in the SEC in Tennessee, number one, undefeated, but 20-1. Lone loss coming to Kansas in overtime, and they are undefeated in SEC play. Do you think they have a legitimate shot to win the championship this year?
I think that, yeah, they have to at least be in the conversation. Offense, defense, like, they've got a real squad. And, Grant Williams has been one of the nation's best players and probably the favorite for National Player of the Year outside of Zion Williamson. They have Schofield, Jordan Bone, Lamonte Turner, Jordan Bowden, all averaging double digits. Kyle Alexander, a guy that I got to watch a bit in high school, always had the 6'10 frame with he's really built onto his frame. He was always really skinny, but 7'4" wingspan was really cool when Athlete Institute Orangeville Prep had starting lineup. It was Jamal Murray, Jalen Poyser, who else? Dang it! It was Maturemaker, Thonmaker, and Kyle Alexander. Yeah. So that was a big lineup. And, Kyle's been pretty big for Tennessee the last couple years.
Yep, he was a guy that you wrote about many years ago, and another thing we can get to momentarily. But the other team I'm curious about, since you got to see them play in person, once again, another undefeated conference team. However, this is in the Pac-12, so you got to watch Washington play last week. And they are in KenPom. They're sitting 2 spots below Wofford and 1 spot above Lipscomb at 33. But they're 18-4 and 9-0 in the conference. And overall, they've, once again, putting up a pretty strong kind of efficiency margin of points per possession. They're at 0.19, mostly, I think their offense is so-so, but defense is their calling card. So what were your thoughts watching Washington in person?
It was the third time I've gotten to see Washington this year live. And despite the pretty sketchy loss to Minnesota early in the year, every team that they've lost to is like a pretty decent team outside of that. Like they lost at Auburn, to Gonzaga, and against Virginia Tech as well. So they, offense is definitely an issue for them sometimes. Like, they can go on some pretty long scoring droughts, and they really depend on two guys pretty heavily, and Jalen Noel and Noah Dickerson. But Matisse Thybulle is one of the best defenders in the nation, absolutely. And the zone, like, obviously Mike Hopkins brought the zone from Syracuse, and it can be pretty tough to score on. And Thybulle is just absolutely all over the place, and it still doesn't necessarily put together great offensive games on the norm. But against USC, the last game that I saw him play, he was solid. He attacked a few closeouts. He made a few jump shots, and I think he finished with around 15 points. And then played his usual excellent defense. He blocked one of Kevin Porter's shots, like, on a jump shot. Like, you know, the guy is just absolutely everywhere. And he actually, his defense was the reason that Washington beat Oregon on the road when Oregon had a very strong chance of getting the final shot in regulation. Thybulle forced a steal on Peyton Pritchard that won Washington the game. So yeah, another team that's very senior heavy, albeit like their leading scorer is a sophomore, but yeah, they start a bunch of seniors, and you know, that recruiting class eventually kind of paid off for them to be the team to beat in the Pac-12 this year.
Yeah, I think it was during the USC game, the ESPN flashed up a stat, and I'm forgetting who else was on there, but it was people that had been averaging over two blocks and over two steals a game, and Thybulle was there, and I wish I could remember the other ones because they're all very well-known players. So definitely, you know, a pretty strong team, and it's kind of crazy how long it's been since Washington has made the tournament. I think since 2011-ish. I think Isaiah Thomas and Terrence Ross, when they lost to UNC, I think was the last time, which is pretty surprising. But you saw the USC game. Once again, chat about him a decent amount, even though he hasn't played a whole lot, but Kevin Porter. So this was your first time seeing him in person in college, but I know you've seen him before at the Hoop Summit. What were your initial thoughts on him since he's been kind of a polarizing freshman prospect this year?
Well, Sean, you and I have had some conversations about him, and I know you've gotten to see him a few times this year. And when he was in the game, you know, the reason I really went to the game was to try and see him and focus on him, since I had already seen USC play Oregon when he was unfortunately suspended. And off the ball, there were some definite concerns. His body language was not great. He seemed to be really upset on a few plays where he felt like they missed the pass, and you know, rather than, like, you know, move to get open or anything like that, he kind of, like, you know, would sort of pout in the corner. And there was one time where he started hopping up and down, like, angry. And it was pretty hard to miss. Now, when he had the ball in his hands, so he made some good things happen. He had one beautiful cut on for an alley-oop, and then he had a step back three, which he seems to make at least once a game, usually. His ability to create space, and even as a passer, you know, they stand out, and has great athleticism, great physical tools. It seems like there are some possible intangible concerns, and he does not seem to necessarily be gelling fully with a few of his teammates. But
nice way of putting it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I don't want to go overboard, but yeah, supremely talented. Definitely, I'd say, like, among the higher upside guys in the draft, but people are going to be doing their research and trying to find out everything possible about him. I'm sure there are going to be, he's going to be a pretty polarizing prospect amongst the people that just look at, you know, his basketball ability and his tools, and like, you know, he's crazy shifty, like with his ability to draw separation, but he hasn't been great as far as, you know, necessarily getting to the basket. And USC doesn't seem to be putting the ball in his hands a lot, which I think they should, and that would be the most interesting thing for the team, which I feel has been wildly erratic when I've seen them play, just in general, not just seeing them live and boozed twice. But the other thing that, you know, we were talking about is his free throw shooting. He's like at 50% from the free throw line this year. And
yeah, man.
So he's, again, like a guy who could possibly go lottery and then could possibly fall a few spots because of just some general concerns about him living up to his pretty vast potential.
Yeah, I know, you know, after the Vanderbilt game, there's a lot of NBA scouts there, and I think he got bumped up to, you know, number six or seven in the drafts, and then didn't really play a whole lot, and then has been up and down. And, you know, I think in terms of his size and just feature to go with his ball, ball handling skills, at least, you know, in one-on-one situations, I could probably – you know, if you're playing one-on-one, I would definitely have him up there in terms of players you would want to take. But when it comes to everything else, still has a ways to go. And the free throws is a little weird, just given how pretty his shot looks off the dribble. And then, you know, how funky it looks when he's on the line. But we'll kind of see how he progresses. But, there, you know, going back to two freshmen, or at least one of them we talked about earlier. So two freshman point guards, Coby White and Trey Jones for UNC and Duke. For most of the year, Trey Jones has been in kind of the late teens, early 20s. And it wasn't until after the first few games, Coby White kind of got put in that late first round discussion. So I'm curious, who would you take and who do you think is a better player slash prospect between Trey Jones and Coby White?
I think, okay, I'm leaning, I know we sort of talked about this the other night, and I've changed my opinion.
You coming around?
Yeah, I am, because in point guards, I feel like offense and being able to get your own shot is incredibly important. And I don't think Trey Jones is necessarily bad at that. I think that, like, you know, Duke is kind of, I don't know, in a few of the bigger games, like, you know, they've kind of depended on Trey for quite a bit of offense. But I think Coby is definitely better there. He's definitely quicker. He has the size advantage, even if Trey Jones may have, like, a possibly longer wingspan. But it's negligible as far as, like, size goes, and I think it definitely goes to Coby there. And, yeah, just the ability to get your own offense, the potential as far as being a shooter. And I think Coby, as far as passing and defense goes, like, you know, there's potential there as well. So I think that increased level of quickness, that's what probably gets me to say that Coby is the guy that I would probably take over Trey Jones.
All right. Well, I was looking forward to kind of going back and forth with you, but I'm going to agree with you on that one. I think Trey's been the one that you always see higher in the mock drafts. Although looking at NBADraft.net, they actually have Coby one spot ahead of Trey, but I'm sure that was a recent change. but I think Coby, the big question for him coming in, and you, myself and a bunch of other UNC fans were wondering, can he play the point? You saw him in, you know, leading scorer in North Carolina State history, U18 USA A team playing with Cole Anthony. Coby he was playing mostly a shooting guard role and excelled at that. And I think I still think if UNC had another point guard, Coby could probably be averaging you know, or at least going for a freshman scoring record. But he's definitely impressed me with his ability to play. He does, you know, some things at times you're wondering what he's thinking, but at the same time, he's playing on a team that's playing the fastest pace Roy Williams has ever played at Carolina. Scoring wise, he's one of those guys, not like Cam, where every time he shoots it, you think it's going in, but even when he's kind of taking some crazy shots, you don't always mind because you know he can hit them. I mean, against Louisville, he had this, you know, drive and deep fadeaway that he took and hit, even though he didn't play that well against Louisville. But he can attack off the dribble. Not a crazy athlete, but he knows how to finish, and he has a quick release, good rotation. So, what you mentioned, offense over defense, that's always my philosophy for the most part, unless you're watching the Rams and Patriots in the Super Bowl. But I think his scoring prowess definitely makes him a better long-term prospect. Trey Jones, I think, is definitely not as good as his brother Tyus. Obviously, that's hard, high expectations to live up to. But Tyus was drafted in, I forget where, but, you know, low to mid-20s, I want to say. And everybody talks about Trey's defense, and I think he's the most important player on Duke. But I think his defense is a tad overrated, and I think he's a very solid floor general, but somebody that doesn't have kind of the upside scoring-wise that Kobe does. So I guess we're in agreement on the Kobe versus Trey comparison, and we'll get to see them in action. You know, and it'll be February 20th and then March 9th. So kind of waiting to the second half of the season, but definitely should be a fun one given Trey's always got the recognition over Kobe.
Yeah. And I still think Trey Jones is going to be like a solid backup point guard, much like his brother. And, you know, possibly like a pretty decent starter. I think that, like, yeah, again, like, Trey Jones is just kind of one at every level. He was really good on Howard Poley, I felt, and was, you know, a strong leader. Was good in, like, you know, USA basketball as well. And, yeah, there have been times where he was absolutely crucial for Duke. And I think they would have won the Syracuse game, like, handily if Trey Jones had been out there the whole time. And, you know, albeit they were missing Cam Reddish as well. I just watched the full game film on that one. So, yeah, it was a tough when it was just a two-man game and nobody was making outside shots. But, yeah, Trey definitely makes things easier. And I think it's very good that, you know, he's been, like, you know, as good as he has on defense. Just a strong indication of his possible future success. And, yeah, again, like his brother, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Not as good of a shooter or offensive player as Tyus, but he's another guy that I think is going to be, you know, worth taking in the first round.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in terms of what coaches would value in a point guard, he had high assists, low turnovers, great assist to turnover ratio, knows how to get Zion, RJ, and Cam the ball. So, you know, if he's hurt, I think they're done with. But unfortunately, I think they do have a legit chance at the championship, which kind of coincides with them having strong point guards of Trey back in 15. And then they went through the Derek Thornton, Frank Jackson, Trayvon Duval, and now back to the younger Jones brother. And once again, I think this team is the most one with the most realistic shot at a championship. But so
they're still my favorite.
All right. Well, switching gears, we were chatting about this before, and you wrote an article back in. We were talking about what. You know, what big name high school players are in kind of the 14-15 or yeah, I guess 15 class are still around that you kind of forgot about or that used to be really big. And we kind of came to your article from 2014 So this was the 2014 Nike Global Challenge, and we were both in attendance in Chicago. I lived in Chicago at the time. We didn't know each other, but it's kind of interesting to read through this article where Steven Zimmerman was one of the key standouts. I remember after kind of a tough AAU season, he played really well, was a great passer, really strong from, you know, that face up spot. And, you know, now
the USA West was a beast too. That was a good team.
And now fast forward and he's kind of a regular in the G League. But I know you got a chance to look through this article, and what are kind of some of your memories from the 2014 class, and who are some of the guys that I think are still in college that you wrote about?
Yeah, man, I had such a different perspective back then than I do now. I remember thinking that Jaylen Brown was definitely the most talented guy there, but he also like turned it over quite a bit. And while he was, you know, super difficult to stop, he also was on a team that lost two games, and one of them was China. And that was like a tough team to watch, the USA South.
Did they also have Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah.
Who didn't do much of anything at that tournament.
Yeah, they were really talented. The guy who I think was probably toughest to watch on that team was Antonio Blakeney. He had just a few times where they were on like, I swear they were on like 3-on-1 or 4-on-1 breaks, and the guy just went himself and missed. And you're like, why didn't you pass the ball? And they were, and you know, I felt like with Brown, Blakeney, Malik Beasley, they should have been among the best teams there. But they were kind of middle of the pack in that tournament. I remember loving Malik Monk and thinking he was super explosive and could score in bunches. Jalen Brunson was, I think, maybe the most dominant guy there. Like, he had a great tournament and just made his teammates so much better. Fantastic court vision.
He was hitting threes from well beyond the NBA arc. And I remember telling somebody, like, yep, he's going to be an amazing college point guard. And sure enough, he won two championships.
Yeah. And, another guy I really liked was DeJounte Murray. I thought he looked really good in that tournament. And,
quote, unquote, the Washington commit has as much potential as any senior shooting guard in attendance.
Yeah. And he turned out to be a point guard. I was a little off there. But, he was such a good passer. And, I just remember a lot of the other guys were kind of ranked ahead of him, and I felt like he was absolutely on their level. Tyler Davis was another guy I remember having a great tournament, but he didn't even play in the final game, and USA West still ended up doing it. I got to sit with the parents of one DJ Hoge, and it was really cool talking with them, and it was a lot of fun. I remember there was a point guard on USA West who eventually got very little playing time and is now in the NBA, but they weren't too impressed with how he was playing during the tournament and felt like he was maybe being a little bit on
selfish.
The selfish side. Your boy Marquise Bolden played on the winning team.
I remember because he was one of the younger guys, and I remember he played pretty well. And at the time, I liked him, and then it was all downhill after that.
God, and I have Deontay Davis as a four. That's just how things have changed, man.
And King McClure, who's still at Baylor. And I
Daniel
think
Gibbons, who's still at Alabama.
The one quote that cracks me up from the world team, Ihab Amin, who played really, really well in the first game and then kind of tailored off. But at the time, he was committed to Texas Corpus Christi, and you ended up saying, so if your favorite college team is playing TCC, he might be worth the watch. And now he's on your Oregon Ducks, yes, so you get to watch him all the time. But interesting kind of blast from the past, and going back to that article and looking at really a lot of guys that are in the NBA, and then, you know, a few guys that are kind of in the G League, but definitely a fun event.
We're still in college.
Yep, exactly. And then just to kind of wrap things up, I know you didn't really want to talk about him, but why don't you throw his name out there of a guy to maybe pay a little attention to from Texas State?
Oh, Nigel Pearson?
Yep.
Yeah. All I know, so I went to a Pepperdine Portland game on Thursday.
Brilliant.
Yes, I did. and a friend of mine was announcing the game for Root Sports, and I thought it would be a good opportunity to catch up with him. And, you know, it's always good. I always like going to games and, you know, just seeing some different teams, seeing if anybody stands out. And it's safe to say that nobody truly caught my eye on this one. And that University of Portland is having a really rough season. So it was a pretty brutal game, and it was over very quickly. Pepperdine won handily. But I was talking with a couple, talent evaluators, one of who I've known for quite a while and one who I just met at the game. And they brought up that when they saw Nigel Pearson play against Portland, they thought he looked like a possible pro. So, he's a guy that, you know, I'm going to try and watch some more film on and keep an eye on. And he's a junior at Texas State. And, we'll see where it goes from there. But, yeah, thanks for putting me on the spot, Sean. Appreciate it.
No problem. So Nigel Pearson, 6'5", shooting guard, averaging 18 and 5 last year as a freshman, averaged 13 and 6, then 15 and 6, shooting over 40% from three. So definitely stats pop out. So appreciate you putting him on the radar to check out. Not that we'll be watching too many Sun Belt games, but definitely a name to monitor when the conference tournaments come around and it's time to start picking conference tournament winners. So we'll definitely keep that in mind.
Yeah, he had 33 points in 33 minutes against the University of Portland.
Well, we know how strong Portland is this year, but yeah. on that note, appreciate you coming on once again, kind of the most frequent visitor. So definitely appreciate it. And as you mentioned, you got to see Washington, USC, Portland Pepperdine. What do you have coming up in the future for games you're going to?
I am hitting up the NorCal Pac-12 schools, playing Oregon this upcoming week. I have Cal tomorrow, which should be a good opportunity to see how Lewis King kind of bounces back from, I think he had a little tough road trip to Utah and Colorado. And then I am going to Oregon and Stanford on Sunday. And Casey Okpala has been a guy that has really stood out to me when I watched Stanford play this year. And Dejon Davis is always nice to see how he does. They have, you know, Oscar Da Silva is a little too inconsistent at this point, but he was a guy that, you know, has been on my radar for a while. And they have like a few up and comers there that are interesting to see. But yeah, they it seems like Oregon at least has a chance this week to maybe get over 500. So we'll see how it goes. How about you, Sean? What do you have up for
Hopefully checking out either Colorado or Utah at either the UCLA or USC game this week, and then might follow your steps and go to a West Coast Conference game and potentially check out Loyola Marymount and San Diego. San Diego's Isaiah Pinheiro, yeah. Who had 30 against Gonzaga, first team all WCC last year, and San Diego was a team I didn't get to see last year, and not a lot of people go to those games, so you can usually get a seat right behind the bench and enjoy some nice low major hoops and have a good time. So we could definitely catch up about those games, but thank you again for coming on and looking forward to chatting again soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Sean. And yeah, always great to be on the Sean Mogul Hoops podcast.
Well, I appreciate it. And looking forward to having another podcast next week. And for all those that have listened, just a reminder, you can hear it on iTunes and you can leave a review if you are so inclined. But thank you to everyone and see you guys next week.